So this is chapter 8, Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, text 15. Mam upetya punar janma dukha layama shashvatam napnuvanti mahatmanaha samsiddhim padamam gatyaha. After attaining me, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world which is full of miseries because they have attained the highest perfection. Prabhupada says here, since this temporary material world is full of the miseries of birth, old age, disease, and death, naturally he who achieves the highest perfection and attains the supreme planet Krishna Loka, Goloka Vrindavan, does not wish to return. Okay? So as Krishna says here, napnuvanti mahatmana, mahatmana, so after they attain it, samsiddhim paramam gataha. And then mamupatya punar janma dukalaya mashashvatam. So once they attain Krishna's transcendental world, they don't return. No one comes back. So the reason is because it's so nice, right? It's like a big transcendental party. Krishna, you know, every step is a dance and every word is a song. And, you know, the flute is constantly playing. It's this very beautiful, blissful, transcendental abode of Krishna. Or once you go there, you never want to leave. Right? Like once you, in other words, what is it that we're looking for in the material world? We're looking for happiness. We're looking for satisfaction. But the soul only finds satisfaction when the soul is in contact with Krishna. The soul only finds peace. Like you're only truly fulfilled. As the souls move throughout their sojourn in the material world, there's an existential unhappiness. There's a dissatisfaction. Even if the world was perfect in every way, we still wouldn't be satisfied. Because we're not in the association of Krishna. It's only that association of Krishna which makes the soul feel totally happy. Not only that, as Krishna says here, this material world is dukha laya ashashvatam. This is a very famous verse because of this, right? It is a dukha laya. Just like in Hindi, the word alaya refers to like a place you buy something. So the dukha laya is the place that you can find dukkha. Just like in India, you can go to a bhogalaya, right? A bhogalaya is a supermarket. It's a place to buy bhoga. So the material world is the dukkhalaya. It's where you can find misery. It's actually, in case you haven't noticed, it's not always a very happy place, right? There's so much misery and suffering, and as you go through life, you basically experience that misery and suffering more and more until finally you start to inquire about what is the absolute truth. I mean, that's the purpose of all the misery, is that as you go through it, you eventually become dissatisfied and you start thinking, what am I doing here? You know, I got to get out of this place. I have to find a solution to material existence itself, right? So that's the reason that the material world has misery. And it's ashashvata. Everything is temporary. Nothing lasts, right? We're all in anxiety because we're trying to grip onto material nature and hold it in place. You know, the different things that we're attached to, wife, children, family, home, a position, prestige, money, wealth, all these different things, we're totally in anxiety because the material world is temporary and we're trying to somehow hold these things in place. We're trying to somehow hold them together. Even our very body itself is you know, eventually succumbs to disease and old age, right, and death. And nothing can stop it, and yet we're determined to try to stop it. We're determined to try to struggle against it. Okay? So the material world has these two qualities. It's dukkhalaya and it's ashashvata. And therefore, as Krishna says here, essentially, by worshipping him and serving him, you leave this destruction of material existence and return to the spiritual world forever. Okay? So, you know, we have to strive for this liberation. Prabhupada says here, the supreme planet is described in Vedic literature as avyakta and akshara and padamagati. In other words, the planet is beyond our material vision and it is inexplicable, but it is the highest goal. So it's very interesting. It's not a place that you see. You know, you can't, like if you turn on the travel channel or something, and you see, like, you know, some guy eating gumbo in Louisiana or something and inviting you to, you know, come stay here and go see this place and that place, right? You don't see that Goloka on the travel channel, right? There's no way that, you know, oh, and come over here. This is Govardhan Hill. You know, here's where, look, there's Krishna now, right? oh, Krishna, do you have a moment for an interview? You know, what do you think of Goloka? Right? What do you think? Where's your favorite place to eat? You know, something like that. There's no proof, right? You can't see it with your senses. It's avyakta. It's beyond material nature. It's akshara, right? It's inexplicable. You can't describe it. You can't fully, even like we're saying right now, or even Lord Brahma, Shri Akanta Kanta Padama Purusha Kalpata Devo, right? He's trying to describe Goloka in the Brahma Samhita. As we said, every word is a song, every step is a dance, right? And yet even that, it can't fully encapsulate or describe Goloka. It's beyond your words. You have to just go there and see it. You know, you have to directly experience it, okay? So it's akshara, and it's the paramagati. It's the highest goal. It's the highest attainment. There's nothing else that you can achieve that is on the level of Goloka. There's no position that the soul can strive for which is higher than that, right? Attaining a relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world, that is essentially where the soul achieves its final destination. That is where the soul achieves perfection. Like the soul exists in complete and whole and in perfect satisfaction and peace. Okay? Prabhupada says here, the destination for the Mahatmas, great souls. The Mahatmas receive transcendental messages from the realized devotees and thus gradually develop devotional service in Krishna consciousness and become so absorbed in transcendental service that they no longer desire elevation to any of the material planets. Nor do they even want to be transferred to any spiritual planet. They only want Krishna and Krishna's association and nothing else. That is the highest perfection of life. This verse specifically mentions the personalist devotees of the Supreme Lord Krishna. These devotees in Krishna consciousness achieve the highest perfection of life. In other words, they are the supreme souls. So the Mahatmas, right? Prabhupada here, notice it says supreme souls in lower case lettering, right? So this is a Mahatma is essentially are those souls who have attained the highest position possible. If you go to Goloka, everyone there is a Mahatma, right? It means like a soul who is actually like risen not only out of the confines of material existence, but a soul that has achieved perfection as a soul. Okay? Mahatmanastu mam parta daivam prakritam ashataha. The Mahatmas are completely under the shelter of the divine prakriti. This refers to Srimati Radharani or Bhakti Devi, Tulsi Devi, you know, the internal potency of Krishna, which exerting its influence upon the soul, engages the soul in devotional service. And that devotional service in its most purest and highest form is there in Goloka. We are coming under the shelter of Srimati Radharani and being engaged directly in the service of Krishna. You're assisting the gopis, you know, decorate the kunj for Krishna, just like you're making garlands for the deities, right? So this is the same activity in the spiritual world. And the fact that you're, as a conditioned soul, that you're engaged in making garlands for Krishna, that's you coming under the shelter of the same divine prakriti. It's you coming under the shelter of Srimati Radharani, essentially. And therefore you're being engaged in making garlands for Krishna. But it's practice, right? And in the spiritual world, you know, maybe you'll appear in your Guru Maharaj will take you at the time of death by his mercy, and you'll enter into Goloka, right? And then they'll come in and, you know, you say hi to Krishna and everything. Krishna's there. Oh, hello, you know, nice to see you. And you look down and you have, you know, your true spiritual form. And then they're like, oh, come over here, you know. Does this table look familiar? Right? And it's the same thing. You know, all the gopis are sitting there making garlands, right? Except they're not talking nonsense, right? Yeah. except they're not gossiping about, you know, what's going on in Nudwarka or something. But they are gossiping, actually. They'll be gossiping about Krishna, right? Oh, did you hear? You know, oh my God, guess what I heard, right? I heard that, you know, this particular elder gopi was picking flowers in the forest, and, you know, she thought she heard Radharani in the forest, you know, like all the, you know, this type of thing, right? You know, and Krishna was also there, you know, and the cowherd boys said Krishna wasn't there at this particular time, and you know what I mean? So, but it's not talking about some devotee's faults, right? So anyway, that's what goes on in the spiritual world, but it's the same divine potency which you're coming under the shelter of, right? So that's what makes you a Mahatma, yeah.
So whatever our dharmas here in the material world or in our bhakti,
mm-hmm.
once we execute it, we have the same one?
No, not necessarily. I'm just going to give an example that it's the same type of thing, right? Okay? Like, for example, what would be your service in the spiritual world? You know, we don't know, you know, you as a soul, but... yeah. But you know, what service do you do now? Well, you welcome people to the temple, essentially, right? So, I mean, that's same thing goes on in the spiritual world, right? It may not be a temple, but you may be welcoming, you know, the cowherd boys, and they're coming to play, and they're all sitting down eating lunch, and some other cowherd boy comes in late, and you're like, hey, Baba, you know, come over here, you know, and I've got some maha from you, and you know what I mean? Like, everybody, we have some sweet that Krishna ate, right? You please take that sweet, and, you know, you try some of this, friend, and you shove it in their mouth, you know, something like that, right? So it's the same activities we're doing now are the activities of the spiritual world, but it's the same divine potency either way. It's the same internal potency of Krishna, which we as souls are choosing to come under the shelter of. Okay? And then those great souls in the spiritual world, they're supreme souls, meaning they've attained the perfection of the soul. Okay? Let's take a look at text 16. Abrahma bhuvana loka punadar vartanarjuna mamupetitikantya punarjanma navidyate. From the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery, wherein repeated birth and death take place. But one who attains to my abode, O son of Kunti, never takes birth again. So all kinds of yogis, karma, gyanahata, etc., eventually have to attain devotional perfection in bhakti yoga or Krishna consciousness before they can go to Krishna's transcendental abode and never return. So, punarjanma nividyate. So for those who attain Krishna's personal abode, mam upetya, right? Mam means Krishna's talking about himself. So for those who attain Krishna, then there's never birth again. And so Prabhupada's making the point here that, you know, freedom from the cycle of birth and death is really by the grace of Krishna, which can only be achieved through bhakti yoga. Ultimately, even these other paths, these indirect paths, they also have the element of surrender to Krishna at the top, right? You have to ultimately surrender to Krishna to achieve perfection in any yoga system, at least if you want to go to Krishna's abode, right? Prabhupada says, those who attain the highest material planets, the planets of the demigods, are again subjected to repeated birth and death. As persons on earth are elevated to higher planets, people on higher planets such as Brahmaloka, Chandraloka, and Indraloka fall down to earth. So you'll see there's these different verses in the Upanishads, very famous verses, which describe the process of, you know, rising to the heavenly planets through sacrifice, right? And you're carried up to various levels of existence, and then eventually you have to come back down. You know, you come back down through the rain, right? So this is the process, like Prabhupada mentions, like a Ferris wheel. You know, you're riding up and then coming back down. Prabhupada says here, the practice of sacrifice called Panchagni Vidya, recommended in the Chandoga Upanishad, enables one to achieve Brahmaloka. But if on Brahmaloka one does not cultivate Krishna consciousness, then he must return to earth. So that's the Upanishad I was just mentioning, where it mentions the cycle of sacrifice. It's the Panchamahayagya. It's described here as Panchagni Vidya. It's basically the five fire sacrifices, right? There's a certain process of being elevated through five stages. So, and then, you know, you can make your way to Brahmaloka. It's a very exalted position. And from there, one can, you know, go to the spiritual world, or one can return and come back down to the lower stages. All right. Let's take a look at text 17. Sahasriyuga padyantam adhadyat brahmano viduhu ratrim yuga sahasrantam teho ratra vido janaha. By human calculation, 1,000 ages taken together form the duration of Brahma's one life, and as such also is the duration of his night. So in these particular verses, these next few ones, the cycle of material existence is described. And Krishna had mentioned, it's, you know, dukalayam ashashvatam, the material world is temporary. And the whole existence itself is moving through the cycle of creation and destruction. And it's moving on massive timescales, but material existence itself is temporary. Just like we mentioned, this body is temporary, your life is temporary, California is temporary, right? The United States is temporary, this whole planet is temporary, this whole universe is temporary. It's coming into being and vanishing at a certain point in time. So therefore, intelligent persons, na teshu ramate buddha, they don't try to enjoy the material world because it's temporary. Yeah, it's basically like if you understand this point about the temporary nature of reality, you won't become absorbed in trying to enjoy it. Why do we really become so, you know, fastidiously engaged in material existence? Why do we grip on it so tightly? Because we don't really see it's temporary. Just like a child at the beach, you know, attached to a sandcastle, right? You know, it's absurd. You built this beautiful castle, and as soon as it dries out, it starts to crumble. What to speak of the tide coming in? There's no way to stop it. And therefore, you know, whatever you build in the sand, nobody's really that attached. Nobody really tries to hold it together. Nobody dedicates their life to holding together a sandcastle. Can you imagine if there was like a grown adult and his whole life he spent at a certain beach trying to preserve a sandcastle he built when he was 5 years old? Oh my God, you know, like, yeah, it'd be crazy. So you'd consider that person crazy. Like their whole life, they sit there guarding it from water and somehow, you know, guarding it from wind. And it's spending their entire existence trying to hold that together. It'd be absurd, but that's the absurdity of existence itself. That's all of us are in that same position.
Being crazy.
Hmm?
Being
yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, basically. Because we're trying to somehow grasp onto and make eternal that which is inherently temporary. And so the whole material existence is temporary. So this, you know, in this whole cycle here is being described. Prabhupada says the duration of the material universe is limited. It is manifested in cycles of kalpas. A kalpa is a day of Brahma, and one day of Brahma consists of thousands of cycles, 8,000 cycles of four yugas or ages, Satya, Treta, Treta, Dvapara, and Kali. So Prabhupada here goes into the time scale of it all. We don't necessarily have time to go through all the details. You know, 1,728,000 years of Satyuga. Basically, it's kind of like, you know, if you look at that clock face right there, which doesn't work, but if you look at that clock, you know, you'll see that it's kind of like the vast majority of the clock would be, or at least almost half of it would be Satyuga, and then Treta Yuga would be, you know, another large portion of it. Right, going all the way, I don't have time to work it out right now, but like say from 6 to 9 o'clock, and then from 9 o'clock to, you know, almost 11:30 or something is Dwapara Yuga, and then Kali Yuga is very small. It's just like the last few minutes, right? It's 864,000 years, but in the whole cycle of time, it's actually quite small. So the, and as Prabhupada mentions here, virtue, wisdom, and religiousness is characteristic of Satya Yuga, and then it gradually declines, right? And gradually, you know, at the beginning of Satya Yuga, you have sort of a full amount of righteousness and purity and morality and truthfulness, compassion, right? And then in nonviolence. So then all these qualities gradually diminish as that minute hand moves. You know, and gradually you get to Kali Yuga. And then finally, you know, like we're in the golden age of Kali Yuga, where there's still some knowledge of God in the world. There's still some knowledge of Dharma, although it's severely, you know, we're missing large chunks of it, right? Like the whole process of yoga and the whole system of Dharma, we pretty much just have like echoes from the past of it, just a few scraps of knowledge coming down from the past. But in this particular time, you have Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu really puts forward the essence of it all, you know, like the highest, most powerful, you know, aspect of transcendental knowledge and Dharma and yoga practice. And it's presented as simply Sankirtan Yajna, which means that the lowest people, the people of Kali Yuga, the most corrupt and the most sinful by nature, are able to take advantage of the highest principles of Vedic spiritual practice and knowledge, right? But it's packaged in a very simplistic way. Just chant and dance and take prasadam and, you know, it's not too hard. But at the same time, it's a great struggle for us regardless because we are sinful by nature. Our very birth within our very conditioned existence is imprinted within these very bodies. These are filled with lust and anger and greed, right? And illusion and so many things. So spiritual life becomes very difficult for us in this particular age. Okay? All right. Prabhupada mentions here, this is about almost halfway through the purport, these four yugas totaling 1,000 times comprise one day of Brahma. So you have, you know, one yuga cycle is one day of Brahma, one kalpa is what they're called. And the same number comprises one night. So when Brahma goes to sleep, then the universe dissolves, or at least mostly, you know, until you get to like Brahma Loka. It's basically like the universe goes through regular devastations. There's the full devastation when the universe is created and the universe is destroyed. And that's a huge, huge time scale. That's one lifetime of Brahma. But there's smaller devastations every time Brahma goes to sleep. Yeah? Every time Brahma, the creator, it's like the universe itself is dependent upon his consciousness. It's dependent upon him being aware, his intelligence invested within reality. He's the architect of the universe. And when he goes to sleep, then the universe to a large degree dissolves. There's like a dissolution, yeah, for every day of Brahma, every night. And so that's at the end of, 1,000 kalpas, 1,000 yuga cycles is one day of Brahma. And then he goes to sleep for the same amount of time. Right? Then he wakes up and has another day. And so he goes through 360 of those days, right, or 365 of those days for one whole year, and then he lives 100 years. So it's a very long time scale. Can somebody close the door, please? There's an earth spirit dancing nude throughout the ashram. Huh? Yeah. Right.
Question. So this dancing these four yugas, are they existing in the higher planets?
So I'm not exactly sure how the demigods experience like Kali Yuga on Earth. You know, the demigods, basically one of their days, like on the heavenly planets, is 1 year. You know, like 6 months for us is, you know, it's basically like their sun coming up, like the way our sun kind of goes from the low, from the south to the north and back again. That's like one day for them, right? So, what, you know, like basically they live in a sense, you know, not on the same time scale as Lord Brahma, right? That's like a very, you know, they, like in other words, when you're living in these different dimensions of reality, time is different for you. So for the if a demigod comes to Earth and then, you know, stays here for, I don't know, 3,000 years or something, then he goes back to his own abode and it's only been a year. You know, it's not a very long period of time. So what is the yuga cycle on Earth? What is that like for them? I don't know. You know, I don't know how they experience it. You know, I don't know if they go through yuga cycles as well. It doesn't say. It just says like on this particular realm for sure, you know, we go through these yuga cycles. Okay? So Prabhupada says here, these 100 years, meaning the life of Brahma, by earth calculations total to 311 trillion and 40 billion earth years. By these calculations, the life of Brahma seems fantastic and interminable, but from the viewpoint of eternity, it is as brief as a lightning flash. In the causal ocean, there are innumerable Brahmas rising and disappearing like bubbles in the Atlantic. Brahma and his creations are all part of the material universe, and therefore they are in constant flux. So that's the main essential point, that the material universes are in constant flux, they're not stable, they're not eternal, and from the position of eternity, it is really just like bubbles and foam in the ocean. You know, like you look at the foam on the beach or whatever, and you see it's made of hundreds and hundreds of bubbles. So those are like universes on the causal ocean. Right, Lord, you know, Mahavishnu is breathing in and out, and these universes like foam, you know, are coming into existence and vanishing just with his breath. So one whole lifetime of Brahma is nothing but one breath of Mahavishnu. Or as Prabhupada says here, it's just a brief as a lightning flash, right? It's nothing. It's just like, it's not even, it has no substance to it. But here we are, you know, as jiva souls, we're eternal, and yet here we are, our consciousness is absorbed in material energy, and we're so attached to this lightning flash that, you know, we're just grasping onto matter, and we won't let go. We won't leave the material universes behind. So it is a kind of madness. It's a pramada, right? It's a kind of total illusion about reality. Okay? Prabhupada says here, I'll just kind of read a couple more sentences in this purport. In the material universe, not even Brahma is free from the process of birth, old age, disease, and death. Brahma, however, is directly engaged in the service of the Supreme Lord and the management of this universe. Therefore, he at once attains liberation. Even sannyasis are promoted to Brahma's particular planet, Brahmaloka, which is the highest planet in the material universe and which survives all the heavenly planets in the upper strata of the planetary systems. But in due course, Brahma and all the inhabitants of Brahmaloka are subject to death according to the law of material nature. So when Brahma goes to sleep, then there's a devastation which destroys Bhurbhuvasva, right? It destroys the lower planetary systems, it destroys this one, which is the middle planetary system, and then the heavenly planets are also destroyed. And so, but the planets of the great rishis and the planets of Brahmaloka especially, it's still there. But then when he dies, even that particular realm vanishes. So it's kind of like even Brahmaloka, it's all based on the life of Brahma. You know, when he dies, then everything he created vanishes. Pretty far out, huh? But it says here, Abrahma, this is why one of the reasons this verse is famous, the previous verse, this Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punadar Vartanarjana, that from the planet of Brahma all the way down, then it's all a place of misery, repeated birth and death. Yeah? So even in Brahma's abode, it's temporary. I mean, they're there, it's different, as it says here, sannyasis go to Brahma's abode. So it basically, in the heavenly planets, there's still sex life. Like, sex life is very prominent. There's still passion. Right? In the lower planetary systems, you have the mode of ignorance. In this planetary system, the mode of passion is prominent. And then in the heavenly planets, it's kind of like passion and goodness. And then the planets of the great rishis, Satyaloka, Tapaloka, Janaloka, Maharloka, those places, it's very sattvic. And that's where the great rishis live. People like Kapila Muni or, the different sages that we hear of in the Bhagavatam, right? So these different sages, the Sapta rishis, so these different extremely pure celestial beings, they're not so much focused on sex life. You know, it's like they're all meditating and, absorbed in philosophy, understanding reality, ultimately devotional service. And that's what goes on in Brahma's abode. And then, the heavenly planets are more like, they're celestial playboys flying around and heavenly gardens and stuff. That's why Narada Muni got in trouble, right? He was Upabarhana. He was a demigod, a Gandharva. And, they invited the demigods to Brahma's abode. It was like a spiritual Krishna Katha, like a program. Brahma was having a home program or something. And he invited some demigods, why don't you come, sing some kirtan and stuff. Do some devotion. You have great musicians and dancers. Do some devotional entertainment. But anyway, Upabarhana was caught on the side. He was, romancing some women, right? He's like a gurukuli, who's a good mridanga player, and he's there, supposed to be in the temple room. He's traveling with the guru, and he's supposed to be, assisting with the guru's Bhagavat Sapta program, right? And he's like one of the singers for the kirtan. But then, he's on the, go outside of the temple room, he's there singing some love songs to some women, right? he's there singing some romantic melodies, that he made up, trying to romance some of the women at the temple or something. So it's considered kind of inappropriate, Or like imagine if you went up into the second story of the temple room, right on the balcony, and then you have some guys like singing love songs, right in front of the deities or something. So it's not, it's not appropriate, right? So anyway, he got cursed. why don't you come to the material world? But that curse is a blessing, because ultimately he became a great, the greatest devotee. He became an incarnation of bhakti, the next universal creation. He was manifest as a son of Brahma, right from the heart of Brahma. So. Anyway, but it's not the realm of Brahma is a place of spiritual knowledge, right? And then when Lord Brahma dies, as Prabhupada says here, then he can go to Krishna's abode. He basically, Lord Brahma, if he's very, if he's Krishna conscious, then he can just go right to Krishna's abode. And he takes all the people with him, all the people in Brahmaloka who are his followers. Like the ones that would sit with Brahma and discuss Bhagavatam or discuss Krishna. And, then when Lord Brahma dies, they all die too, right? But they all immediately transcend and go to the spiritual world. So it's a very highly exalted place, right? You can imagine what it's like at the last moments of Brahma. you know, when they're all getting ready to go back to Godhead. We're talking like thousands of rishis, you know. And then Lord Brahma is leaving his body and they're all in meditation, you know, Om, or, you know, whatever it is. At the very moment of universal destruction, they're all chanting and glorifying the Supreme Lord and go back to the spiritual world, right? So, but, you know, there is, but the essential point of all of this is that the universe is temporary. None of it lasts. And in the Brahma's abode, they understand this, right? Text 18, avyaktad vyaktaya sarva prabhavantaharagame ratriagame praliyante tatraiva vyakta sangyake. At the beginning of Brahma's day, all living entities become manifest from the unmanifest state, and thereafter, when the night falls, they again they are merged into the unmanifest again. Okay? So, you have the, you know, when there's this universal destruction, the living entity is going from a vyakta state to an avyakta state. And when there's universal creation, they go from the avyakta state to the vyakta state, meaning from manifest to unmanifest, and then back again. So unmanifest means that you basically stay, as a soul, you're within the body of Mahavishnu. Say, like at the end of the universe, then the soul is not manifest. He's not active in material nature. Rather, the soul sits in a state of basically amnesia, or what is that called? When you go to the doctors and you have surgery or something? Anesthetic, right? Yeah, you're put under a state of anesthesia. So there's different levels of consciousness for the soul, right? There's jagrati, which is what you're experiencing now. That means you're awake. There's svapna, which means you're sleeping and dreaming. And then there's the, I just totally slipped my mind. Susupti, which is the state of consciousness where you're totally unconscious. There's no consciousness, there's no dreams or anything. So the living entity, we can go into that susupti stage. There's another one too, beyond that, which is like the level, the platform of the Supreme Lord. You know, like basically, you can drop down to the, when every time you go to sleep, you drop down into the susupti state, and this is according to Bhaktivedanta Purnaswami. So when you drop down into this deep stage of sleep, this avyakta condition, you're actually sort of in a sense coming in touch with the platform of the Supreme Lord, you know, with Mahavishnu, and therefore when you awake you feel refreshed. Right? Like when you sleep, you go through these different stages. You go through the dreaming sleep and the not dreaming sleep. And then by coming down into the stage of total unconsciousness, for a moment, it's like you reach a certain platform of the soul where you feel the soul feels recharged, right? So there's this element of, you know, the same element in the devastation of the universe, that when you, essentially, you're dropping down into the state of total unconsciousness. So you're not conscious, you know, through this whole, there's an entire period where the, of, you know, think how long, 303, 4, what is it? What did Prabhupada say here? The total. 311 trillion, right? So for 311 trillion years, you're totally unconscious, you know, and you're not dreaming, you're not doing anything. You're just like you're in anesthesia, right? And then when there's universal creation again, and then there's a sub-creation, Lord Brahma creates the universe, so then you become awake. You're awakened along with your desires that you had previously and along with your karma. All of that travels with you. The super soul is so powerful and so knowledgeable that when he awakens all the living entities and ejects them into the universe, he restores their subtle body, including all their karma and all their desires. They start right where they left off. Pretty amazing, huh? And this has happened to all of us each time. We've all experienced universal devastations. Think about that. What was it like the last time the universe was destroyed? You know, where were you? Well, we're all there. I mean, you see it like in movies and television, right? They have these movies like, I can't remember what they're called, like Apocalypse or whatever. What is this one? 2012 or something. And there's like some big comet coming from space and like ramming into the earth, you know. You have this idea of like, within human society, of, you know, experiencing a total devastation of the universe, just a devastation of the earth. So we've all experienced it before. You know, we've experienced through the various nights of Brahma, we experience it, and through the death of Brahma, we experience it. So this, you know, and then we go into this unconscious state and we're awakened again. So it's happened to us so many different times. Right? And that's what happens to us at death as well. Death is kind of like going to sleep. You know, you when you die, then you enter into, you know, svapna and then jagrati, you enter into the same, you every time you go to sleep at night, you're kind of dying in a sense, or you're having a sort of death experience where you enter into the svapna state, then you enter into the susupti state of total unconsciousness, right? And then again you come out of it. You may be in susupti for just a short period, you know, just like a minute or something. And then you come back to dreaming sleep, and then you again awaken, right? And, you know, they what are the scientists that study sleep, they see that you go through these different stages. You know, the brain waves change, and you're going back and forth. You know, you'll dream for a few hours, then you'll go back into unconsciousness, then you'll dream again, you know, and you go back and forth like this. Wake up to go to the bathroom, right? Come back to sleep. That's jagrata, right? So you're constantly, we're moving through these stages of consciousness. And then at the time of death, you essentially go into that state of consciousness again. Susupti, and then again you wake up within the womb in a new body. And it's the same thing with the universe. You know, at the end of the universe, you go into an unconscious state. But instead of being for, you know, a few months or something, you're in the unconscious state for 311 trillion years.
Mm-hmm. So what is the transferal of the soul from the material world into the spiritual world? What is that? Because your consciousness is already spiritual at the time of death, so you can just simply transmigrate. You don't... Because if your body is eternal in the spiritual world, how can there be transmigration and acquisition of the new body if the bodies in the spiritual world are eternal?
Yeah, sure. So we're, you know, basically time in the material world is almost inconsequential in the spiritual world. Mm-hmm. So it's just like if you, the entire time you spent, just like, you know, my classes are so boring that students, you know, sometimes will nod off for a second and raise their head. That's kind of what it's like. You know, so it's not like you ever really left. You don't, I mean, one sense, you don't really fall down because it was just like a lightning flash. The whole experience of material existence, even though it lasted, you know, so many trillions of years, from the perspective of the spiritual world, it's basically like, you know, you were swimming in a river and you went down under the river and then you came up again for air, you know. It's just like the lapse of a brief moment.
Mm-hmm. So we just fell down to... reawaken ourselves and go back
to God? Well, anyway, I don't want to get into all that because we got to stay focused on the text and what we're talking about. I don't want to get into a whole discussion of, you know, why we fell down and all this stuff, okay? that's a class in itself, okay? So, but basically, the whole material existence and the cycles of nature and these different, moving through these different stages of consciousness that we're in, the highest level of consciousness is the spiritual world. It's our true spiritual nature. But we're sort of like, you know, we're turned away from that and we're turned towards matter. And within matter, then we experience these different stages of consciousness and unconsciousness. But we have within, I think it's called turiya, you know, it's the final condition of the soul and enlightenment. So in that particular stage of consciousness, that final stage, you know, we are essentially who we are in the spiritual world. We do have a true spiritual identity. We do have true spiritual consciousness, okay? But we forget it while we're in the material world. Okay, so let's take a look at text 19. Bhutagdhama sa evayam bhutva bhutva praliyate ratriagame vashe sorry ratriagame vashaparta prabhavatyad agame. Again and again, when Brahma's day arrives, all living entities come into being, and with the arrival of Brahma's night, they are helplessly annihilated. Prabhupada says, the less intelligent who try to remain within this material world may be elevated to higher planets, and then again must come down to this planet Earth. During the daytime of Brahma, they can exhibit their activities on higher and lower planets within the material world, but at the coming of Brahma's night, they are all annihilated. In the day, they receive various bodies for material activities, and at night, they no longer have bodies, but remain compact in the body of Vishnu. So that's when we're unconscious, right? You're there in Vishnu. And as I said, you know, with basically, this is all temporary. You, again, when Lord Vishnu glances at the material energy, you're again injected into the material universe to begin your activity again. They say, Prabhupada says, they are manifest at the arrival of Brahma's day. Bhutva bhutva pradiyate. During the day they become manifest, and at night they are annihilated again. Ultimately, when Brahma's life is finished, they are all annihilated and remain unmanifest for millions and millions of years. And when Brahma is born again in another millennium, they are again manifest In this way, they are captivated by the spell of the material world. But those intelligent persons who take to Krishna consciousness use the human life fully in the devotional service of the Lord, chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Thus they transfer themselves, even in this life, to the spiritual planet of Krishna and become eternally blissful there, not being subject to such rebirths. So, but if you want to go to Goloka, there's generally one more birth, right? Like, you can go to the spiritual world. Prabhupada mentions, like, a flash of lightning. You know, you're there with Krishna. It's not a question of, like, kind of fearful, horrible experience of traveling, you know, through death, traveling through the place between birth and death and somehow coming out into a womb. Rather, just in a flash of light. You know, oftentimes people describe the time of death. There's, you go into the light, Carol Ann, you know, right? There's the tunnel of light and you're moving towards the light. So, you know, there's a sense in which that light can be Krishna, you know, like at the time of death, you just enter into the light, you know, there's a flash of light and you're there with Krishna in the spiritual world. There's no pain, there's no suffering, there's no disturbance or anything like that. But there's another element where if you're trying to associate with Krishna in Goloka, you have to develop a certain qualification. Is that Prem Sankirtan again? So there has to be a certain qualification. Just like if you were to try to go to the spiritual world right now, you wouldn't work out very well there, right? You wouldn't, if you just somehow, you know, warped Star Trek or something, you like somehow warped yourself into the spiritual world as you are in your consciousness now, you wouldn't really be fit to hang out there. You know, I mean, I'm sure they would all be very nice to you and stuff like that, but you would be, you know, probably conditioned by the lower modes of nature. You know, like your consciousness is not very pure. Of course, I mean, if you were to go there, you'd probably become pure, but the point is that we're not really qualified for their association. And it's the same thing, you know, to go to Goloka and to associate with the gopis and gopas and cowherd boys, you know, and Mother Yashoda and all this stuff, you really have to be trained up, right? There's a few more things you have to learn that you won't learn in the Pujari room, right? You may learn to make garlands and stuff, but if you want to hang out and serve Mother Yashoda, you know, you need some extra training, right? So therefore, you'll take birth again wherever Krishna's having his pastimes in the material world, right? There's a transcendental roadshow which moves from universe to universe. Krishna's manifesting himself in his particular incarnation of Krishna. And so you'll take birth wherever he is by divine arrangement. And then you can kind of learn especially how to serve in the spiritual world in Vrindavan, right? And then from there you'll go to Goloka Vrindavan. So let's take a look at, but don't worry about it, you know, don't think, oh, well, I'm going to take birth again into a world, you know. Don't worry about it, it's okay, you know, it's all, you're there associating with Krishna. It's not quite like being in Los Angeles, right? So let's take a look at text 20. Parastasmat tu bhavanyo vyakto vyaktat sanatanaha yasa sarveshu bhuteshu nashyatsu na vanashyati. Yet there is another unmanifest nature which is eternal and is transcendental to this manifested and unmanifested matter. It is supreme and it is never annihilated. When all this world is annihilated, that part remains as it is. So Krishna's superior spiritual energy is transcendental and eternal. It is beyond all changes of material nature which is manifest and annihilated during the days and nights of Brahma. So parastasmat tu bhavanyo vyakto vyaktat sanatanaha. So you should know that there's this transcendental nature beyond these two natures, beyond the state of avyakta and beyond the state of vyakta. Yeah, it's sanatana, it's eternal. So it is like we said, there's these different stages of consciousness. There's the jagrata, svapna, and the susupti, right? There's the total unconscious state. There's the dreaming state and the wakeful state. So the spiritual world is beyond all of this. Even when you're unconscious in the body of Mahavishnu, as Prabhupada just mentioned, the spiritual world is beyond that. Okay? Text 21. Avyakto kshada ityuktastam ahu paramam gatim yamprapyana divartante tadhama paramam mama. That which the Vedantists describe as unmanifest and infallible, that which is known as the supreme destination, that place from which, having attained it, one never returns, that is my supreme abode. So Krishna here is saying, Tadhamma paramam mama. He's directly saying that this transcendental abode, beyond the dissolution and creation of material existence, is his Dhamma. It's like we say, Vrindavan Dham. So the Dhamma means, like, and it's an abode, it's a place you live. right? It's your neighborhood. It's Krishna's hood, right? Mm-hmm. It's where Krishna lives. It's where Krishna does his thing. It's where he hangs out with his friends. It's where he hangs out with his parents. It's like if you go into, go visit your parents or something, you go visit your neighborhood, right? That's basically what it means. You know, it's where Krishna has his activities. He has his pastimes, right? It's where you'll find him. It's where he's doing his thing. So that's Krishna's dhamma, okay? And as Krishna says here, yam prapya na nivartante, those who go there never come back. Yeah? You'll never return. And so that's the transcendental goal. It's the paramam gatim. Okay? Prabhupada mentions here in the purport, let's take a look about halfway through, about one third through, it says, the Lord is accustomed. This is kind of a description. There's a description of in the Brahma Samhita which is mentioned here. The Lord is accustomed to blow his flute, Venum Kvanantam. His transcendental form is the most attractive in all the worlds. His eyes are like lotus petals, and the color of his body is like the color of clouds. He is so attractive that his beauty excels that of thousands of cupids. He wears saffron cloth, a garland around his neck, and a peacock feather in his hair. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna gives only a small hint of his personal abode, Goloka Vrindavan, which is the supermost planet in the spiritual kingdom. A vivid description is given in the Brahma Samhita. Vedic literatures, Katha Upanishad 1.3.11, state that there is nothing superior to the abode of the Supreme Godhead, and that abode is the ultimate destination. Purusham na padam kinchit na kashta padama gatihi. When one attains to it, he never returns to the material world. Krishna's supreme abode and Krishna himself are none different, being of the same quality. On the earth, Vrindavan, 90 miles south of Delhi, is a replica of the supreme Goloka Vrindavan located in the spiritual sky. When Krishna descends on this earth, he sported on that particular tract of land known as Vrindavan, comprising about 84 square miles in the district of Mathura, India. So it's the 84 Kroshas, right? So Vrindavan, is a certain area, but it's just a reflection of the spiritual Vrindavan. There's Gokula Vrindavan and then Goloka Vrindavan, right? Let's take a look at text 22, which we also mentioned yesterday. Purushasa pada parta abhaktya labhyasvananyaya yasyantastani bhutani yena sarvamadam tatam. The Supreme Personality of God, who is greater than all, is attainable by unalloyed devotion. Although he is present in his abode, he is all-pervading, and everything is situated within him. So this is a very powerful verse. Purusha sapana parta. So that Supreme Lord, bhaktya labhyas fananyaya, he's only obtainable through bhakti. That's powerful. Mm-hmm. Right? That's why when Prabhupada says in the previous purport that to go to Goloka, to go to Krishna's abode, then even if you're another form of yogi, even if you're a jnani yogi, karma yogi, right, ashtanga yogi, you have to surrender to him. You have to ultimately come to bhakti. Now that's not just, some obviously there may be someone who objects. No, that's just your interpretation, right? You bhakti yogis, you always say that stuff. You always say you can only attain liberation through Krishna. That's not true, no. But here Krishna himself is saying it, right? Bhakti labhyastananyaya. You can only attain it through bhakti. There's no other way. I'm sorry, right? So, yasyantistani bhutani yena sarvamadam titam. And this is a very, powerful conception here, very important spiritual conception, that although Krishna's in his abode, yasyantistani bhutani, still he's there pervading everything. So even though he's in the spiritual world, he can hear us right now, right? He's there right now. Who knows what he's doing? He's probably doing something with the Cowherd Boys, right? Well, it's considered mid-afternoon or late afternoon. So he's probably bringing the cows back to Vrindavan, right? Right now the dust is kicking up all over Vrindavan and Krishna's walking barefoot along the sandy pathways, herding all the different cows, blowing his flute, calling them by their names, right? Counting them on his beads. He has beads, right? There's Mardanga Mukhi, right? And there's, he has all the different names, Mardanga Head, right? all sorts of different names for the cows. And, they've got mouthfuls of this Padma grass that they're chewing, right? And they're all looking at Krishna. Krishna plays his flute and walks with them, and they moo and they look back at Krishna, right? And all the cowherd boys are jumping along and playing and, doing fun stuff, throwing stuff at each other and, playing tag and all that stuff. And so Krishna makes his way into Vrindavan. And you see, and it's described, you know, by the Acharyas what Vrindavan is like, you know, sort of like before you even come to the little village, there's, you know, like say Nanda Maharaja's barn and all his area, you'll find, you know, big bales of hay all along, right? It's like you walk towards the place, it's all, you know, it's some sort of, there's the forest and then there's fields and there's pathways leading towards, you know, Nanda Maharaja's place. And then you'll see big giant bales of, big mounds of hay, like all over the place before you even get there. Right, and then as you get there and kind of make your way there, you see, you know, Nanda Maharaja's house. There's like a little tower in the middle, and then, you know, Mother Yashoda climbs up in the tower and she looks out and sees, oh, Krishna's coming. You know, she can see all the dust kind of like billowing into the air of the from the feet of the cows, which is very purifying, right? And so all these things are going on there right now, but Krishna's also here. He's pervading everything, right? There's no part of existence that Krishna's not saturating. Everything is Krishna. Even though he's there as the personality of Godhead in his original form, Svayam Krishna, still, this is all his effulgence. We're all sitting in his aura. We're all sitting in his effulgence. There's the beautiful Brahma Jyoti, which is emanating from him. And then, there, you know, that little boy in Vrindavan, there's a beautiful light, you know, emanating from him, filling all existence, which is endless and incalculable, right? Beyond any kind of comprehension but his own. As the totality of existence. And then on top of this Brahma Jyoti, in a little small part of it, you know, there's all these spiritual abodes all over the place too. But in this little corner of it, the Tribhad Vibhuti, in this little tiny corner of the spiritual world, there's a little cloud of material existence covering the Brahma Jyoti, right? Covering this effulgence. And inside that entire cloud of existence, you know, you have billions of incalculable number of universes. Manifesting, and every universe is a tiny, it's just there for a flash and then vanishing. And within that little universe, here we are. We're in one universe, the universe of the four-headed Brahma. Right? So, but even though we're in this universe, everything is Krishna, and everything is emanating from Krishna. We're just resting within his power. He's conscious of everything. Yeah? So even this discussion going on right now, he's conscious of everything. He's there in our hearts. In fact, he expands himself as the Supersoul, as almost like he's an avatar, he's a Purusha avatar, just for us. Right? We each have our own special avatar. Isn't that amazing? Like, not only does Krishna come as Narsingha, Varaha, you know, he comes as Naranarayan Rishis, he comes in all these different ways, and he comes as empowered individuals like Narada Muni or as, you know, Srila Prabhupada. Not only does he come to us in all these different ways, and he comes to us as the Shastras, right, manifesting directly, even Srimad Bhagavatam is the Grantharaj, right? It's the incarnation of Krishna in book form. And what to speak of the Maha Mantra, right, which is directly Krishna in the form of sound vibration. But he also comes to us as our own avatar. Dun 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 dun, dun. Hello.
Hi, Super Soul. How are you doing there?
Right? He's there right now. And he's described as the size of a thumb. Right?
He's there inside our heart, right?
He's following us as the conditioned soul, and he's been following us since the very beginning, since we first entered material existence. The Super Soul, our particular Super Soul, has been with us. Of course, it's all the same Super Soul as well, right? Like the Super Soul in my heart and the Super Soul in your heart is ultimately the same guy, right? He's the same Krishna, just like the sun is shining up in the sky. But if you have hundreds of, you know, water pots, you'll see inside every water pot one little sun, yeah? So in the same way, but it's ultimately one sun. So in the same way, we all have our own incarnation of Krishna with us. You see, so, you know, Krishna is so very merciful and he pervades everything. He pervades even the atoms as the Supersoul. And yet there he is in the spiritual world, herding cows. Right? You know, he's not worried about existence. He's worried about whether Mardanga Mukhi is here. You know, where did the cow go, right? There's a certain cow, you know, I saw kind of like, yeah, all the cows were herding and he kind of got a little greedy and went after some nice patch of grass. Maybe got separated. Maybe I have to go back and find him, right? Mm-hmm. I counted them all twice, you know. I counted all the cows, and I counted the beads twice, and I'm missing one, you know. And I know who it is, you know. And I've called them all, and they all turn around and look, and, you know, I don't see them. So I have to go back, right? And then, you know, the cowherd boys maybe come and say, no, no, we'll go back. We'll find him. We know where he is, Krishna. And Krishna says, no, you know, I have to go find him. He's my cow, right? And so there's maybe a whole leela just with one cow, you know what I mean? So all these different things happen, you know? Maybe that cow felt like Krishna. He wanted to just see Krishna alone or something. You know what I mean? There's all these different little intricacies between the devotees and Krishna. So that's what Krishna is absorbed in. You know, he's not absorbed in the material existence. He's absorbed in having fun and exchanging love with his devotees. But nevertheless, he's also conscious of everything, right? Okay, so let's take a look at the last... Let's look at the second paragraph of this purport. To enter Krishna as a supreme abode or the innumerable Vaikuntha planets is possible only by bhakti, by devotional service as clearly indicated here by the word bhaktya. No other process can help one attain that supreme abode. The Vedas, Gopal Tapani Upanishad 3.2, also describe the supreme abode and the supreme personality of Godhead. Eko vashi sarvaga Krishna. In that abode there is only one supreme personality of Godhead whose name is Krishna. He is the supreme merciful deity, and although situated there as one, he has expanded himself into millions and millions of plenary expansions. The Vedas compare the Lord to a tree standing still, yet bearing many varieties of fruits, flowers, and changing leaves. The plenary expansions the Lord preside over the Vaikuntha planets are four-armed, and they are known by a variety of names. So these are the names we put on tilak with, right? Purushottama Trivikrama Keshava Madhava Aniruddha Rishikesha Sankarsana Prajumna Sridhar Vasudev Damodar Janardhan Narayan Vamana Padmanabha etc. The Brahma Samhita 5.37 also confirms that although the Lord is always in the supreme abode Goloka Vrindavan, he is all-pervading so that everything is going on nicely. Goloka Eva Nivasyata Kilatma Bhutam. As stated in the Vedas, Shvetashvatara Upanishad 6.8, Parasya Shaktir Vividhaiva Shuyate Swabhavaki Jnana Bala Kriya Cha. His energies are so expansive that they systematically conduct everything in the cosmic manifestation without a flaw, although the Supreme Lord is far, far away. So, Parasya Shaktir Vividhaiva Shuyate. So, Krishna has all these different Shaktis and energies, right? And especially the Jnana, Bala, and Kriya Shaktis. So anyway, we can talk about those some other time. But basically, these are very powerful energies which Krishna uses in the creation, manifestation, dissolution of the universe, right? And fulfilling all his desires, etc. Okay, so tomorrow we'll discuss then the different times at which one may leave the body. And so that is coming up in the next verse all the way pretty much to the end of the chapter. All right, thank you very much. All glories to Prabhupada.